Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
So 2012, the mythical year, is coming to an end, and we've been keeping an eye on events over the last 12 months just to get a feel really for what's going on in the news. And we've been pretty open-minded up until now about what may unfold, all the Mayan calendar prophecies, etc. But it's interesting really that we're at that point now at the end of the year where people, I think generally, are kind of already at the point now where they've forgotten about it, like it was all just hype and we've moved on. But I do think we've had a pretty interesting year. We didn't see anything happen on Friday the 21st of December, but I think we pretty much had concluded beforehand that that wasn't necessarily the great end Armageddon date that people made out. That all seemed to be pretty hyped by the media in the end, I think. I mean, would you say that's the case, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, as I said in our broadcast we did over the change of the year from 2011 to 2012, I was looking at Jeff Stray's book, Beyond 2012, and it looks at many different sources in history and archaeology, taking various timelines and bringing them together. And they do come together on 11/11, 21st December 2012. but it was never going to be that everything happens at that point.
No.
I mean, some of the bold predictions said, the eye in the forehead opening and seeing higher dimensions and stuff, but there could well be a frequency change that's going on, and this could be happening. I think it is happening. We've seen a huge increase in the level of interest in these subjects from even a few years ago, I think. And I think even the act of focusing on that day on 21st December, we're all looking at the internet and posting things on there. On our Facebook page, I put a photo collage of a thing we have in Brighton called Burning the Clocks, which marks the midwinter solstice. And it was actually made from photos I took last year, but it was kind of looking ahead to what would happen that evening. And that was instantly had a couple of likes. I saw someone else posting stuff from Patriot Radio or something coming up on the same page. I think you posted something, Martin, quite quickly afterwards. And just within a few minutes, there were things coming up on the page. So it seems like all over the world, everyone was putting stuff up on the internet that was relevant to 2012. So that was, in a way, a demonstration of interest in the subjects.
Yeah.
And of course, David Icke was on the Alex Jones show, giving a very good interview on there. So
yeah, and all day on Friday, Mayan was the key, the most popular trending topic on Twitter, for example, which is a sort of measure now of an interest in a particular area, sort of hive minds mentality. But that was interesting, I thought. It seemed to be, you know, because in the 90s or whenever, when people like Terence McKenna talked about the 21st of December 2012, they didn't know about Twitter. Twitter didn't exist, but this has become some sort of great hive minds now. And for a long time, that was the trending topic for hours, for a day, in fact.
There's a point to not prejudge what you think an awakening is going to be. I mean, if you thought 10 years ago it would be a particular thing, you're not factoring into that 10 years more of technology. So you're looking at, trying to work out what an awakening would be in 2012 with the know-how of 2000 or 1990. You're not going to get it right. You're going to get something like it. You're not going to get the exact outcome. I think in terms of what you might call an exoteric outcome, which is something that's clearly seen, it was a little disappointing in that sense. But I think in terms of knowledge of the esoteric and focusing on the theme, I think it was probably pretty good. I mean, I'll just say one thing I have to say is I'm very glad there were no false flag operations on the day that we know of anyway.
Yeah.
And nothing huge seemed to happen in the news that was bad. I mean, a week before we had the shooting in the school in America, that was terrible. That was on a Friday. I was a bit concerned that they may be prefiguring that to be repeated or something similar. Obviously, the schools would be on vacation on the 21st, quite probably, but they could have used that to prefigure a similar false flag scenario. That doesn't seem to have happened to my knowledge, and we don't know what may or may not have happened and what may have been called off or thought about. But like with the Olympics, it was a day at the start of the year we were worrying about, and you know, nothing seemed to happen in that way. They seem to be using it, if they are using it, as a way of maybe controlling some of the knowledge. And like you said, the hive mind can be controlled, but Twitter is a two-way feed. I mean, there are things on there that are manipulative, but you can open an account and put what you like on this. You can use it back as well as a weapon, I would say. You know, I still think it's better to concentrate reading decent articles in books and magazines rather than concentrating too much on low-level text-based information on the internet. I think it's a good way of getting some information, but you're never going to get as much than you will by studying longer term. But like you say, Martin, it's a good way of dipping in and getting an overall picture of what's happening at any given time.
Yeah, it is, and it represents the hive mind, as I say. I mean, that's what I mean. There's technology out there now that taps into Twitter and analyzes what's going on and provides a sort of real-time flavor of the consensus view on a particular subject based on tweets. And the more people that use Twitter and actually actively tweet, the more accurate systems like that will become. But not everyone's on Twitter. It's still very much a first world technology. It doesn't really take into account third world perspectives on things. So it's not there yet by any means, but it is an interesting development. I mean, I think it's kind of going from strength to strength. And on the flip side of that, you've also got all the noise that Twitter generates, and that can sometimes be detrimental to serious research. You've got trending topics that range from Justin Bieber to Gangnam Style. It's just, it can be just absolute noise and just meme type culture that is not helpful. But sometimes on a date like 21st of December 2012, you see an interesting development, which is that it taps into the hive mind mentality. But yeah, it may not really be symbolic of much at all, but it's interesting nonetheless, I think. But Terence McKenna, I mean, he was the guy that, I mean, some suggests that really all this 2012 business, he, in a way, he was talking about Time Wave in the 90s, he pretty much created this hype himself. If it wasn't for Time Wave, the whole Mayan calendar business wouldn't really have been that analysed by people, certainly sort of in the last decade or so since Terence McKenna's death. But I've now heard articles and read articles even and heard interviews since in the last few weeks where people have actually revealed they knew McKenna quite closely, and they've said that actually McKenna didn't really believe that anything necessarily major would happen on that date. He actually was more scientific in his approach, and he had this time wave zero technology, that this thing he discovered, this pattern based on the Chinese I Ching, and he wanted somebody to prove that it was nonsense. In many ways, he found it quite frustrating that nobody could come forward and completely just denounce the whole thing, which I find quite interesting, because in a way, McKenna was actually kind of angry that in the end, nobody just come forward and just shown him why it was flawed. But the thing that McKenna did say was he believed that perhaps something would happen on the 21st that wouldn't necessarily be at the forefront of everybody's attention straight away, like i.e. some sort of invention or some sort of great eureka moment in a lab somewhere where we don't necessarily know what is happening at the moment, but in 6 months' time we may find out some great scientific truth or some revelation that we don't know about yet. And he suggested that time travel would be a good candidate for that. Finally, maybe somebody's cracked the way to go back in time or go forward in time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know if we ever discussed John Titor on this channel, but that was a very well-known time travel story about someone who seemed to come back from the future into, I think, the 1990s or maybe in the 80s, I'm not sure. But it seemed to have, it was searching for some parts for a computer they had in the future, and he can only get them in the past, and they were to operate a computer. Which
an IBM machine.
Yeah, which the parts weren't available for, and he seemed to have a car with futuristic, sounds a bit like Back from the Future, I know, but it does actually, there were some interesting photographs on the line showing it, and it did seem to be a well thought out, if it was a hoax, it was a well thought out scenario. We had a car with various bits in it that didn't seem to be, a fake machinery, and I think there was no trace of this guy and any birth records. He just was around the Florida area for a while, then he disappeared, and it could well have been he was a time traveller. Of course, the Philadelphia experiment was a very big story back in the 40s, where they tried to, make a ship invisible or move it from place to place. It's never quite certain what was going on there, but it could have been time travel, or the sort of Hutchinson's effect energy field created, and they weren't quite sure what it was doing. And you know, time travel and physically moving an object is probably very closely related phenomena. And if you're not sure what you're controlling, you may get something happening that you're not quite sure what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think these sort of things may well be happening somewhere like the, you know, the Large Hadron Collider, you know, yeah, stuff like that could be going on.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
was that, I mean, I guess that was one of the significant moments of the year, I guess, where they finally came out and said they discovered what they describe as the Gauss particle and all that business. That was one of the events of 2012, really. And that's all as a result of the Hadron Collider. But whether or not that's necessarily particularly relevant, I don't know, because, I mean, from what I know of that subject, that may not necessarily be as important to science as the media made out at first, because as soon as that was announced, they're now coming out and saying, well, actually, that doesn't really prove much at all. It doesn't. That's not the be-all or end-all of science and of quantum physics. It's just yet another theoretical discovery, and it doesn't really answer that many questions, and it actually generates more questions than answers in some regards.
Yeah.
So that's probably not particularly relevant, in my opinion. And then you've got, I guess, the whole other side to 2012, which was the Olympics in London and all this stuff that was going on in the UK, but was obviously worldwide because the focus was on London for a few months, and obviously various other events, but the Olympics seemed to be the big one. And it was interesting seeing the way people reacted to that, because that kind of came and went. And again, there was a lot of hype. People were pretty sure that there was going to be some great false flag event, but nothing actually happened. But we didn't necessarily predict it, but I think we both, if I recall right, we were both kind of open-minded, but perhaps a bit cynical about the idea that something massive would happen as a result of the Olympics. It all seemed to be... I think we kind of know that these things have a slow burn, you know, there's a slow burn going on here. It's not all happening at a speed where we can sort of predict it, say it's going to happen on this week or this week. Things happen, and usually people can't predict what's going to come. It's like 9/11. Nobody just predicted that date out of thin air. Nobody was on the radio months before saying we're going to have a big event happen on 9/11, because I've worked out the symbolism. These things tend to be discovered after the event.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Jones did predict something like that, but maybe not on 9/11 itself.
Yeah, he maintains that he believed that something was going to come during that period, but he didn't necessarily have the specific details. And
no,
I think the problem with the Olympics hype was that we had people like Ian R. Crane making out that they pretty much knew exactly where there was going to be a terrorist strike, and he pinpointed it down to a particular day, I think, and he stressed that it was just a theory. He didn't have any proof hard evidence, but he did kind of try and make out that he had a very good idea of what may or may not happen. And I think the hype just got a little bit out of control, but it was a very serious period of our of our journey as researchers across the board, not just us but everyone that's into this subject, because it was such a monumental event, and there was so much symbolism involved, and things seemed to be coming together from different directions, and it just seemed to be this amalgamation of years of things sort of coming together. But the fact nothing necessarily happened of much significance, I think, put people on a bit of a downer for a period of time.
What, within the conspiracy movement?
Yeah, because certainly the impression I got from going on various forums and that was that people, you know, they didn't want something to happen in terms of there being a great event, but they wanted to see some acknowledgement, perhaps, that all this stuff isn't kind of just flawed and perhaps just misguided. But I think the problem is that a lot of the time, it's like what Alan Watts says, it's a little bit more of a slow burn than that, and it's all a little bit more based around what goes on behind the scenes. And I think we certainly saw a lot of symbolism during the Olympics, and a lot more has come to light since then. I mean, I must admit, during the Olympics I didn't really spot much, but since I've seen videos that have showed very interesting things going on during the opening ceremony and things, such as, you know, like the usual kind of Eye of Horus and all this stuff going on. And you look back and you think, well, actually, it was the energy that that generated, and it was the focus that it had that may have caused some sort of subconscious response, and across the globe, it may have actually had an impact on the energy of the whole world. But it didn't necessarily require there to be any kind of great physical event. It could have all gone on at an energetic level.
Yeah,
quite interesting.
Yeah, we need to expand on this. I mean, we had Ian R. Crane talking at the Culture Festival. I think it was in July in Brighton, which is an earlier episode, still available. Recommend anyone has a listen. There's still good stuff in there to hear. And I'm not here to put Ian down. We have had a slightly revisionist sensibility towards Ian's work since that talk he gave. I remember at the time I did speak to Ian after the talk, and I did feel part of his research, from my point of view, was a little fast and loose when he mentioned computer graphics being used in the film Independence Day, and they were using miniature effects, and he, you know, took that on board, but I felt perhaps should have gone off, thanks, I'll make sure I change that in future. I had a feeling he was thinking, yeah, that's quite nice to know, but perhaps not understanding that he was actually putting out a mistaken thing that he may have said many times, you know. And there were one or two people in the audience, so again, we won't have to name on here, who had, you know, one or two reservations about some of the content. Let's just leave it at that. We had a drink with Ian afterwards, so, and he's a very nice guy to talk to. He had a call on his mobile phone in the pub, bizarrely, I think after Martin knew he had to go home. And Roger Hayes had been arrested that very evening. We actually heard that live, you know, from the horse's mouth that very evening. In fact, Roger Hayes is another campaigner. I think he does stuff on the Freeman type stuff, which Ian might, I think, is involved with or follows anyway at some level. So that was an interesting development that evening. Could have racked up the paranoia if you were so minded. I couldn't watch all the opening ceremony because I had a very strange synchronicity happening that weekend, where I very nearly had to go to Wales to get an award that I was shortlisted for, but then I didn't get the award and they didn't tell me in time, so I was planning to go to Wales and couldn't go and wasn't sure if I might have to go at the last minute. So that was a personal kind of weird situation, so I wasn't really able to kind of follow it all. I've subsequently looked at some of it on the iPlayer, and I did watch the end of it live, the various athletes coming out and walking around, and I was amazed at the lighting and the stage and the pixel effect. Before the Olympics, I haven't told Martin this, he might be interested to know this, I did a bit of remote viewing to see whether there would be anything happening. And that's where you lay back and you do a bit of psychic, just kind of let your mind go quiet, you just see if you get any images in your mind, and I just thought, let's see if there's going to be anything happening at the Olympics. And all I got in my head was little squares of light, like a grid, and it made no sense to me, and it just vanished, and I thought, well, that's a rubbish answer. But I always get some accuracy. I do find you usually get something accurate, but it's often very odd what you get, and you can't really say it means anything. And then when I saw it on the TV in a local pub, which I saw just the end of the ceremony, but I saw a lot of them, they had the pixelated lights on the actual seats, I thought, well, that is so amazing, that's so high tech. And then I thought, well, maybe I was getting a glimpse of that, you know, that pixelated effect in some very dim way. Yeah, so I thought, well, that might make sense. So that's what it is. That's so amazing. And it occurred to me the kind of British, good old British technology, British film technology know-how that had gone into making that stadium so good and getting those pixelated lights so good was so impressive. Any UFO that would have come over would have been dull in comparison.
Yeah.
Ian was showing pictures of kind of good old 1950s flying saucers hovering over a stadium. And, you know, I'd love to maybe see a flying saucer, but quite honestly, if one had turned up, it would have just been, you wouldn't really have noticed it. I mean, I don't think, to be honest. I did go back and look at, I think, the 1984 Olympics, where there was a very good UFO lands in the stadium, and an alien gets out and addresses the audience, and there's nothing in it at the time to make it seem fake, although it's probably a stunt. But on YouTube, again, you go and search for several other videos, and there's one that says you can hear the helicopter in the background. Ian had been saying possibly that's a real video, that every UFO really does land. But again, if you research a little bit more, and you didn't do that, you can find sources saying, well, that you can just about hear a helicopter in the background, so this thing was on a very high cable. And again, there are a lot of people a little bit gullible, because again, even a friend of ours I was talking to about this, and he seemed to think, well, it could have been real. And I'm thinking, well, that was the Los Angeles games. I mean, there are quite a few special effects guys live in LA, and again, it's easy to go, oh, well, it wasn't, they didn't have CGI and all this sort of thing, but a lot of it's ignorance, because not everything is done in CGI. And even nowadays, like the new film Skyfall, I mean, I noticed there was a miniature effects credit at the start of that film, for example. It's not all CGI, never was, never will be, probably.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just ignorance. You have to do a lot of things full size. I mean, in Skyfall, when the tube train falls through the roof of the underground, an amazing effect. It was done full size in Pinewood Studios, actually built that whole bit of track and that whole underground cavern and shoved a real train through there. And it was so dangerous, they couldn't even have anyone in there. They had to do it all with remote control cameras. That shows you what you can do with expert technology, expert physical effects, it's known as in cinema. Like when they made films like The Poseidon Adventure and had to dump loads of water into upside down sets to make it look like the ship had turned over. Things like that. Or even James Cameron building an almost full-size Titanic and tilting it up on cranes to make it look like it's sinking. I mean, it's incredible technology and cameras and rigging and hydraulics and wire work, cable work. These techniques are tried and trusted and do amazing things. And a lot of that wizardry would have gone into making a UFO look like it landed in Los Angeles in the opening or closing ceremony, I think it may have been, in 1984, and yet you get people going online saying, and Ian is one of them, saying, oh, but that could have been a real alien landing, you know, that could have been them just not telling us. And that's a level of gullibility that's disappointing. And then when he said about Independence Day being done with CGI, which it wasn't, I thought, well, you're not really researching things very well. And I think Ian, unfortunately, I think he sees two and two and adds them up and comes up with six very often, you know. That's the way I saw it. And when I saw these pixels, I thought, well, that's it. That's so amazing. That's the effect you're going to remember, that they got these pixels. And they did the closing ceremony, had them there again. They did the Paralympics. They had very good ceremonies for that as well, which haven't got quite as much coverage, but were very well done as well. And they're all amazing. It was psychedelic, really. And you're going to remember them forever. You're not going to forget that.
Yeah.
And they'll be used again. The stadium stood. I've been up there twice. I went up to the Olympics and the Paralympics, just wandering around London. I went right up to the stadium, went right past it through the secure zone on the train and looked at it really close. And it's an amazing building. And the weird tower next to it will be interesting to go and look at when it's fully open. I'm not saying there isn't any symbolism in it. I'm not saying that there isn't a bit of globalist agenda or New World Order agenda. I think there is, but I think it's not as obvious as saying, we'll build a big stadium, make it impressive, then we'll have a UFO come over. It's like, why design it all so well with these all-seeing eyes and stuff in it? And if you're not going to make that really work, and if you're going to do those lights so well, that's going to have such an effect anyway. You don't need to trump that. Why would they blow it up? If they've done all that, they've got the effect they want. They don't need to blow it up. They could blow something else up next year.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you don't do all that and then, you know, put that on and then blow it up during the games, because you're going to have the effect. I mean, even when they had it in 2005, they had 7-7, but it came after the day that the thing was announced that we'd won it. And I was worried that afterwards they might pull something off. So you get the lifting up of everybody, then they might do something bad afterwards. And that could have been even in December this year, you know, because what's 1 year in a calendar of, you know, years and years?
Yeah, right.
It's just 1 year. So they don't have to think about all this being in 1 year. There might be that a year later they might do something. You go next year, oh, remember in the Olympic Games, that was a great summer last year. Go and buy the book. It's all out now. We've got all the stuff out in the shops. You know, it's bound to be a bit of nostalgia and stuff. They could pull something off then. But trouble is, you know, in this sort of area, predicting exact events is a fool's errand. And I'm afraid Ian has lost the respect of many in the field, sadly. A friend of ours, I won't name on here, but actually was been sort of banned from his email list. He'd just been thrown off it just for asking Ian a question about something. So that's what sometimes happens. And again, we're not trying to put Ian Crane down. I still think he had a lot of good things to say. But unfortunately, it's mixed up with a lot of stuff that's very, very speculative, to say the least, I think. And he needs to get these UFOs out of his posters and stuff and start talking more about what's actually happening and not what he might want to happen.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think he could learn a lot from somebody like Brian Gerrish, for example, who we've got a a good, you know, episode.
Yeah.
With from 2010, I think, and that's a really one of the, you know, one of the most powerful talks I've ever been to was one of Brian Gerrish's. But it's definitely an event like the Olympics that perhaps had an effect on an energetic level, as opposed to anything else, and that seems to be what the so-called Illuminati actually are all about, is symbolism and influencing energy and having an impact on what goes on different levels of reality, not necessarily the five sense physical, which is what we're all sort of so obsessed with, and that's what we're always looking out for, is these big events that occur that are something we can perceive and put a camera to and film. But perhaps it, really that this year's been all about what's going on in other realms, the unseen realms of energy, and the side that Ike is now focusing his research on, and I think Ike's definitely going in the right direction, because he, if anything, he seems to be going down that route even more, and he's now really, I mean, certainly he's, based on the talk he gave in October, the one at Wembley, he's absolutely still adamant that is the direction the research needs to go. It's all about the nature of reality, and it's all about dimensions, and it's all about frequency and vibratory rates, etc. And that's something that I think we need to remember when we look back at this year, is what actually happened on an energetic level. And I think perhaps we did witness a lot go on, and it's not just the Olympics, it's this recent business at Sandy Hook, which even Alex Jones, I think, recently suggested could have been something that was designed to actually affect us on an emotional, dimensional level, sort of a sort of great global sense of despair and fear, and it sort of perhaps had some sort of aim there, based on that. But it's speculative, obviously.
Yeah, the guy was on antipsychotic drugs, serotonin uptake inhibitors, and that would have affected him. That's the usual score, I'm afraid. With the Dark Knight killing, there were similar things going on, where the guy was drugged up, and we don't know if there are other gunmen in the Sandy Hook one, but certainly the guy was on heavy drugs and had the usual thing. We'd done loads of video games and was basically kind of mentally ill and really just pumped up and programmed, really.
Yeah.
So it's a very sad thing, that. Yeah, tragic. And but I think we thought something like that would happen once they started going on about the gun laws again, and once Obama was back in, which apparently has been a bit of a fraudulent election as well.
Yeah.
So I think things are stepping up in a way that maybe we wouldn't quite predict. But as Judy Wood says, sometimes, you know, look at what's actually happening, not what you're meant to think is happening. You know, they may well pull off an Olympics and they're working other things somewhere else, you know, and you're not quite looking in the right direction sometimes, you know. And
absolutely,
they pump up the Olympics and everyone's looking at that thinking something's going to happen there, while other things are maneuvering around, and yeah, your eyes off the ball a little bit, you know. I mean, the best thing Ian Crane has had in his talks is that sort of face with half the brain being a kind of sunny glade of happiness and the other half being little compartments of grey men in little cells doing typing and things like that, you know, and you've got this kind of split between the right and left brain. That's a very good graphic, and that's something I think is happening. I do think there's a fight between having that kind of spiritual sense of being in the moment, the power of now, and that kind of sense that David Icke was saying on his talk on the 21st December on Alex Jones, Infowars.com, that you're having the experience of being someone in a particular situation, or having that experience, if you can think about it, it's like almost like a puppet you're operating, but from within, and you're trying to make the best life you can for yourself through that experience, and you're having other things coming at you from another direction, from outside, it seems, and pushing you down into a darker, greyer kind of existence. I mean, I know myself going into the DSS office, I mean, it's a literal model of that grey walled little rooms with little characters sitting in there typing away, and you literally come out and it's a nice street with sunshine and clouds, and it's a literal right and left brain split, and even the architecture of the building is kind of a concrete bunker. Again, very depressing. And David Icke suggests in his very long talk at Wembley Arena, which we put out our little naughty version of some of that these squares are actually, they come from a kind of frequency vibration in themselves, and these black cubes you see around sometimes in sculptures and things like that have an actual sort of controlling effect. And I think looking at the modern architecture, the brutalism, the concrete neo-brutalism it was called, of the 60s, it may well have been more literal in that sense. It wasn't just a kind of weird art thing to say. It's very modern and harsh. It may well have been a deliberate psychotronic attack by building things that look depressing. You make them depressing, you know. If you build a very ugly apartment blocks, put people in them, and ugly offices, and you just go around horrible bits of towns that are just these geometric lumps of concrete. There's nothing there for the eye to settle on or look at, or, you know, you couldn't do a painting of it or be inspired by it. You know, it's just a kind of non-place. And it does maybe make a frequency vibration of greyness and sharp geometry and harsh angles, you know.
Yeah.
And you've got old buildings, they may look a bit run down, but they've got little arches and detail, and your eye can settle on them, and there are little places where birds can nest, and you get places you can put plants and little stained glass windows and look up to chimneys and things like that, coving and different details. It's interesting and it gives you stimulation. And I think a lot of the buildings nowadays are deliberately designed to be very negative, particularly in the 60s, funny enough, which is seen as such a progressive decade, but architecturally was a very regressive decade, and it did the most brutal and horrible concrete things right into the 70s. It started to change a little in the 80s with postmodernist architecture, which is a little bit more fun to look at. But the sort of 60s and 70s stuff was very depressing, and I think it might have been deliberate, may well have been a deliberate thing.
Yeah, well, it's certainly been an eventful year, and I think it's definitely had some symbolic sort of elements of it that, like we're saying here, it's not necessarily what's happening in the physical realm. Perhaps it's more the energetic and what's really going on at the level of collective psyche, perhaps on a cultural level. And I think as most people have said, and most people really know about the Mayan calendar business, the really what it's all about is the end of one cycle and the beginning of a new cycle. All this nonsense about it being the end of the world and 2012 representing the end of civilization was all utter nonsense, and it was all just hyped by the media. And one thing that frustrated me really was seeing all this nonsense online and on TV, etc., and this kind of like global sense of it being cool to sort of acknowledge that it's not going to happen, nothing's going to happen, the world won't end, oh no, you know, the time has come and it's passed again, everyone's back to the day job. And somehow it's cool to be kind of seen to sort of denounce this stuff now. And it's like it's that's what really frustrates me in a way, because it's sort of like people think it's hip to look at this stuff. They're ignorant, they've never researched it, they don't know the history, they don't know where it's really stemming from, but yet they're very quick to just laugh it up and then just spit it out and then go back to whatever else it is they're doing. And it's frustrating because it's such a rich area of research, and it doesn't really deserve that. But unfortunately, that's the nature of the collective consciousness and the nature of, you know, the mass consumption consumerist society we're in, I guess. But certainly I think we've done enough this year to keep a lot of this on record. I feel like we've had a good output this year. We've marked a lot of the major events, and it's all there for people to listen back on. And maybe in the next few years people will look back at this year and acknowledge that it was in fact the beginning of a new cycle. And really what we saw was exactly what made sense and what we could have, you know, easily expected to happen based on what's unfolding. So hope you have a good new year, and stay tuned for more updates.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.